Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The number of coronavirus cases and hospitalizations has been consistently climbing in South Dakota. Each week since March, we've talked with medical professionals trying to stay on top of what we know today that we didn't know before. Dr. Wendell Hoffman is an infectious disease doctor with Sanford Health and has been a frequent guest on the show and others regarding COVID-19. Dr. Hoffman, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be with you, Lori. Hope you're doing well.
So far, so good. But this is one of the things that's happening in my life, and I suspect in many others, as we look at what some of these numbers are telling us. It seems like I know a whole lot of sick people right now, and all of them are sick in different ways. People who have gotten positive COVID tests, I mean, and the symptoms are manifesting in everything from the most painful sore throat that she can't speak to dizziness and he can't stand up to, you know, mild symptoms, to hospitalization. So I think it's a good time to kind of go over that again, if you don't mind, because as more people have personal experiences with the virus, it could be easy to make generalizations. And it seems like generalizations with this virus, other than how to prevent it, are not such a smart thing. Tell us why people have so many different manifestations of what this virus does to their bodies.
Yes, so this is one of the fascinating aspects of this virus. Part of several main characteristics of what we've learned overall, we call this It's really the protean, P-R-O-T-E-A-N, nature of this virus, which describes exactly what you're stating, that it can present really with very minimal symptoms to dramatic pneumonia and respiratory failure. The reason why is that the virus is basically becomes kind of systemic, and so it can manifest with everything from respiratory, upper respiratory, lower respiratory. It can manifest with GI symptoms, neurologic manifestations. It's just the nature of the virus, and it therefore, and in terms of the dramatic numbers of cases in our community, I mean we've not seen this, essentially, that we're seeing in the Dakotas anywhere before. I mean, it is unprecedented. And with every passing day, at this rate, all of us are increasingly likely to come down with COVID-19. It's really a density and a pressure thing, somewhat like the pressure of water as it begins to increase will start seeping through the foundation, the walls, the doors, the windows. I mean, the other day, the percent positive in South Dakota was 46%. I mean, this is astounding. And which, on that particular day, therefore, it means that nearly one out of every two people who were tested were positive. So you're right. All of us are getting to know people with COVID. I mean, I'm seeing it in my own practice. Multiple patients who come in here saying, my relative, my brother, my aunt, my sister have had COVID. So South Dakota is getting to know this virus up close and personal.
Yeah. I want to go back to that 40% positive number, because people like to fight about those numbers on Twitter and say that, you know, that number is not as relevant as we think it is because of how we're doing our testing. Is the percent positive number in South Dakota relevant, and how do you use, you know, that number to think about the overall prevalence of COVID-19 in the state?
So we don't really know the overall prevalence. I mean, there are studies that are coming out now that are trying to determine overall seroprevalence in the country. One major study came out that said during the first wave this spring, probably less than 10% of the population actually developed antibodies. In other words, there's a long way for this virus to run, but the percent positive is in fact important. It's kind of like, the statement is made, well, the reason why we have more cases is because we're doing more testing. Well, that's kind of like saying that fish hooks create fish. No. Fish hooks reveal the fish that are already there. And every good fisherman knows that when you have a lot of fish biting, you need to put a whole lot more lines in the water. In other words, we ought to be doing more testing. And so the other thing I would point out is that the reason we're having all these tests, I mean, we're not doing very much asymptomatic testing. And so that means that when someone comes in for a test, they're having symptoms of some sort, just like you illustrated in the people that you're speaking to. So I think that's we need to debunk this that somehow this is not important. It would be kind of like using the analogy of fishing. It would be kind of like in an area that you're fishing. You know, nearly one out of every two lines that are put down are you're getting a bite. So the percentage is very important. The World Health Organization says that if you want to kind of try to keep it down under control, you need to be down closer to the 5%. So we've been trafficking in double digits for a long time, and this 46%, while it might be kind of an outlier, is still dramatic. And more than anything, it means that we need to be taking this very seriously. We're not on a good trend here.
Mm-mm. I want to talk to you a little bit about hospitalizations and the notion of capacity in this context. You know, we talk about keeping our healthcare providers safe with the appropriate amount of personal protective equipment. But those people are also human beings who send their kids to school, perhaps, or who come home and, you know, stop at the grocery store. They're also people who get tired and stressed and anxious like the rest of us and feel overworked and want to do their jobs very, very well and don't appreciate having, you know, more work than they can reasonably do in a day, particularly when the consequences are so high. So let's talk about our healthcare workers a little bit and what they're going through right now as those hospitalizations rise.
So, yes, in our medical center, we're essentially one out of every five patients in the house has COVID right now. Now, that's both critical care units and the general floors. That's a big deal. And because hospitalizations and mortality lags behind the current caseload, you know, over the next 2 weeks, next month, we're potentially looking at much higher levels than we're seeing now in terms of hospitalizations. But imagine, it's kind of like the domino effect, right? I mean, it's bad enough if nearly or 20% of your beds are occupied by COVID patients, but that drastically changes how you manage all other patients who do not have COVID. So this is a domino effect, and it's sad, but I don't think that many people are connecting the dots. We have to be concerned about all cases in the community, and as the community prevalence rises, it makes it more likely, as I said, that any of us could come down with illness, with some sort of symptomatic manifestation of COVID. And with regards to healthcare workers, actually, they're at greater risk from their own families and from the community than they are from being in the hospital, believe it or not. I mean, there was a big study that came out of the University of Minnesota that strongly demonstrated that. And so, again, if you want to help the healthcare system, we got to get the whole thing under control. This needs to be considered holistically because we're putting healthcare workers at risk. You're right. We all have families. We go home. We have kids. We're going to get exposed. And the higher the prevalence, the higher the density of that virus in the community, the more likely it is that healthcare workers are going to come down with it and could potentially drag it into the healthcare context. So we have kind of a real vicious circle going on here. And the only way out that I can see is that we all need to strongly view personal responsibility like we've never seen before. I mean, these cases are going straight up in the air. I mean, this is like our slope looks like a perpendicular line. I mean, this is not Mount Rushmore. This is Mount Everest. And I never thought I would dream that the four faces could be carved in Nepal, but there they are. And there's no sense of, you know, how are we going to flatten this? despite the fact that we've got good examples in the South, Arizona, Florida, Texas, all of whom are not liberal bastions, if we will, if we want to put a political twist to it, all have Republican governors that I recall, all who made moderate changes in what they were doing and brought their numbers under control. And so we have to do something similar like that in South Dakota. Otherwise, if we just sort of let the virus run, and you know, we're going to, I fear we're going to pay a heavy price, because we're playing around with terms like herd immunity, which has never, by the way, in my experience in more than 40 years in the business, ever been used as a population strategy other than with vaccination. And so, you know, something's not working in this state, and we need to change. And it's up to everybody to view this as personal responsibility and personal obligation to our fellow neighbors and family and community, because obligation always undergirds rights, every time. The reason why I have a right in the first place is because someone else felt an obligation. And so we really need to take that very seriously. We need our leadership from the governor's office on down to be out in front of our people every day. Because, you know, when the wolf is stalking your family, it's okay to cry wolf. In fact, it's appropriate to cry wolf. Mm-hmm. And, yes, we're very fortunate that the mortality rate is so low. But when you have a very large number of people coming down with this illness, you're going to have a lot of people with what we call post-COVID, with post-COVID syndromes. And therefore, it's not just those people in the hospital. This is not just a mortality issue. This is a morbidity issue. And so we have to, again, we have to take a comprehensive approach. We need leadership to lead us. You know, we people are kind of like sheep, you know, in some ways. We need to be led. And the evidence is clear. If you have strong leadership explaining the rationale for what, you know, for what could be and what they can do, the vast majority of people will follow. So we really need that leadership component from here on out. And I hope we'll begin to see that.
I want to come back to, you know, how we should behave right now in a moment. But there's a couple questions I want to ask you today, Dr. Hoffman, that I'm seeing in the community or either seeing on social media, or am I getting direct questions from listeners or family and friends? And one of them has to do with preparing. It's a little grim to think that these are the kinds of questions people are asking, but preparing to go into the hospital, what kind of information you should have prepared to go with you. So if you have underlying health conditions, for example, and then you have COVID symptoms, a lot of people are kind of getting their affairs in order. And what is useful, especially if you can't, you know, go in with, you know, someone, what kind of details are important for healthcare workers when they see someone with COVID-19, as far as what else is happening in their health? What do you need to know? What's useful? What's kind of irrelevant?
Yep. Well, part and parcel is that when anybody presents to a physician or presents to an emergency room or an acute care facility or whatever, you know, a past medical history is going to be taken, and so any good evaluation is going to include that. If you have been in the system before, someone will be easily able to identify pre-existing conditions as we commonly identify them associated with COVID-19. And so, I mean, but it is important for your healthcare providers to know kind of even more specifically, what are your symptoms? What are you experiencing? And then if you're not part of a system that's previously recorded your data, your healthcare information, then you need to give them a full account, and they will take that into account then in terms of how they approach people. But yeah, that's just a general recommendation for people presenting.
Yeah, medication lists, things like that. I mean, should you have, if you come in and you
Absolutely.
have a piece of paper with things on them, does that do people want to have that information handed to them? I mean, they're going to
Oh,
ask you
absolutely.
too, but yeah, okay.
Yeah. No, but that's a great point. I recommend all my patients come in with their bottles. Put your
Yeah.
bottles of medication in a bag and bring your bottles of medication with you to the hospital because it's the only way, it's what we call medication reconciliation. It's the only way that we can know exactly what medicines that you are taking. So that would be huge as one of the things we would want to know about.
All right. Another question is about ventilators and families that have been asked if they want a comfort extubate. I'm not quite sure if I'm using that word correctly, but taking someone off a ventilator because they don't believe that they're going to survive, so that ventilator can be used for someone else. That's kind of the world that we're living in right now, is this idea of triage and making choices about care. Is there anything that you can say about some of, is that sort of thing the kind of situation we're in already, where some choices are being made? Is that coming?
Well, in terms of the number of ventilators that we have, I think we're not anywhere near to exhausting that supply. I mean, and we can easily adapt certain units into units that accommodate ventilators. And so, I don't think we're at that point. Although, it's feeling more and more crowded, if I can put it that way. But no, I think those kinds of discussions are therefore much more individually made. I mean, if somebody comes in and already is a comfort care only or is what we call a no code, that would be put into place and would be factored in then to decisions with regards to their management. And so, the questions are asked, Mrs. Johnson, if your respiratory status goes downhill, would you want us to do everything possible to try to prolong your life, to maintain your breathing? Would you want to be put on a ventilator if your heart stopped? Would you want us to perform chest compressions and all of those things? That all is considered when we assess people's overall health and expectations, so to speak. So, but I mean, you're raising a good point. Many people have not thought about this, and while we don't want to, unduly scare people, it's what we all should be doing anyway. And we should have those kinds of conversations in our family, and that those conversations would then extend into the healthcare context where specific questions would then be asked of the patient, and if the patient's not able to answer or partially answer, then families would be brought into the mix.
Before I let you go, I want to circle back to this question of how should we behave now? We've talked about leadership and what we need from, people being out in front of the public and answering questions and policy changes and stuff. But when we talk about personal responsibility, what behavior should we be engaging in right now as individual South Dakotans? What should we be doing?
So last week, an initiative that was signed by multiple different organizations across the state called Mask Up South Dakota, hashtag Mask Up SODAC, illustrated the basics again. Wearing a mask to cover your mouth and nose when around others. Practice social distancing, which means putting 6 feet of space, two arm lengths between yourself and people who don't live in your household. Practicing good hand hygiene, which means washing your hands often. Cleaning and disinfecting frequently touched surfaces daily. Staying at home when you're sick or have been exposed to the virus, except to get medical care. We don't want people delaying their non-COVID-like illnesses because they're afraid. We want you to come. Cover your cough and sneezes and monitor your health daily and watch for symptoms such as fever, chills, cough, shortness of breath, or difficulty breathing, fatigue, muscle or body aches, headache, new loss of taste or smell, sore throats, congestion or runny nose, nausea or vomiting and or diarrhea. So our Sioux Falls-based affiliation of infectious disease physicians called the Humphreys Forum signed on as one of the sponsoring organizations to this encouragement to our state. And so that's what we're really encouraging patients as well as each other to do.
Dr. Wendell Hoffman, we really appreciate your time. Oh, and get your flu shot.
Oh,
I'm going to throw that in there.
Thank you for that reminder. Yes. Please, get your flu shot.
Dr. Wendell Hoffman, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lori.